up, power players? It's your host and founder of Empower Nani. I'm coming to you live with another episode of Power Talk. So welcome to season 1, episode 90, baby. Let's go. Now, I bet you guys are wondering, Nani, who did you bring into the building this time? The guests are getting better and better and better. Well, guess what? I got a real gem for you guys today. I got the one and only Miss Emily Fursella. That's right. This is the wife of Andy Fursella, but not only is she the spouse of an amazing power player, she is the twice published author of Fresh Farmhouse Kitchen and The Saint's Plate and The Sinner's Dinner Cookbook. She's a clean eating chef. She's the creator of Fit Home and Health. She's the co-host of the Food in Session Nutrition Podcast. She's the founder of the Women in Business Workshop, and she's the COO of 44/7 Media. She's a business coach, a public speaker, and she's living in St. Louis, Missouri as a transplant from a small farming community with a passion for creating clean, healthy dishes that are not only delicious, but are also budget friendly. This lady is a freaking powerhouse. And for all my ladies out there, if you're looking for a big, big power player, if you're looking for a woman in power, someone to move you like Andy Fursella has this big movement, I'm telling you, Emily Fursella is the one. We dive into self-love. We dive into mindset. We dive into her story. She is the woman with a plan, and she's the mastermind behind a lot of the transitions that her and Andy Fursella team up with. So I'm super, super pumped for this today, and I can't wait for you guys to dive in. But you know, I got some requirements, and that's this. One, turn off all your distractions, turn off the noise, turn it off, and completely hone into this conversation. Requirement number two, make sure you got a pen and paper handy, because this conversation is so you could go ahead and write down your takeaways. And requirement number three, it's simple. Once you're done listening to this conversation, once you're done writing down notes, go ahead and execute. Because we all know action is cool, but we want you to go ahead and execute. Because this show is about you getting empowered. Empower of your life, empower of who you are, empower of your brand, empower of your business, empower of your relationships. Because this isn't just for entertainment. This is for education purposes. So with that being said, I got one last question for you, and that's this. You ready? I'm ready. Let's go. So as you guys know, I always started off saying, how you doing, how you living, how you being, because there's so much more to those powerful questions. And today I have a true leader, and I'm actually super excited because it's a woman in power. I have Miss Emily Fursella in the building. She is a twice published author. She's a clean eating chef. She's the creator of Fit Home Health, the founder of the Women in Business Workshop. She's a business coach and a public speaker. And for those of you guys that know, Andy Fursella is married to her. So welcome, Emily. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me. I love this.
No problem. And I'm so pumped to talk to you about mindset today, health. But most importantly, I want to just talk a little bit about your journey and how you got started as an entrepreneur. I love to know that you started up a lemonade stand, but what really inspired me was knowing that you were replicating your father's steps. But you didn't have the same success, but you definitely had the same exact drive. So can you tell us a little bit about your early childhood so we could dive into that experience?
Yeah. So I grew up on a row crop and cattle farm, just about an hour and 20 minutes west of St. Louis. And my dad was an entrepreneur as well. He owned trucking companies, brokerage firms. He's always working. All I ever have known in my life is like an entrepreneur style of living where it's not a 9-to-5. It's literally like from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. You know, I grew up seeing like you wake up early, you take care of the cattle, you take care of the farm, you come home, you get ready for work, you go to work, you come home, eat dinner, and you work some more, you know? So I learned that work ethic from, you know, seeing my dad and seeing how my mom supported him, you know, wholeheartedly. And she took care of me and my sisters. And it was just, I mean, it was a full on like experience, because people like they don't understand like how an entrepreneur like lives. They're like, man, it's just crazy. It's like, but I saw the support behind it, you know. I saw, you know, my mom would never ever talk bad about it, you know, like, oh, your dad's working. It was always, he's working so hard to provide this, or he's doing this. So it was like so complimentary of him. And I think that's a huge thing for any entrepreneur. That's just kind of like a side note. If you're an entrepreneur or your spouse is an entrepreneur, it's important that your children see you mimicking the support that you're showing them, and never saying negative things, even if you are, you know, upset that they're not around as much or things like that. That they're working hard to provide a life that you're a part of. Yeah. So seeing him do this, I knew that I always wanted to be an entrepreneur myself. So at 14, I started working. I got my first job. I was a waitress at a local diner. I grew up in a small town, and 14 years old, you could work there.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I also worked at a golf course. And so I did that to save money because I knew I wanted to, one, buy my own house, and I wanted to start my own business. So I saved up enough money for a down payment, bought my first house when I was 19, did a whole reno on it. And then a year later, I bought my first building, property, and started a business. So I started a flower shop, luxury gift boutique, tuxedo rentals, wedding planning, the whole shebang. So I did that for several years. And then I decided probably 5 or 6 years in to sell that and move to St. Louis. I did that. I was in a relationship at the time that wasn't supportive of the entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it just wears on you. You become bitter, resentful, and it was just not for me anymore. So I sold my business. I said, fine, I'll sell the business, put it up for sale. And within 3 hours, it sold. The building, storage units, the everything was gone. I was like, holy shit, I wasn't quite ready for that. You know, the ink barely dried on the real estate papers. So then I just, you know, found myself working as an operations and accounting manager for a design firm, but I knew that I always wanted more. I knew I wanted to own my own business again. I always had a passion for cooking, and I was like, I'll just start out Facebook community, you know, free Facebook platform, 15 followers. And I started just making healthy recipes because I wanted to, you know, enjoy like these home style meals, but not have, you know, all the fats and carbohydrates and stuff that you would have in like a home style country meal. So I started doing that, posted on Facebook, you know, started getting a little bit of traction, and I was writing these recipes down. It was mainly just for self-serving, so I would write them down to remember them later.
Yeah.
And then I kept doing it, and I was like, you know what, I think I should write a cookbook. And then, you know, Andy and I were talking about it, and he's like, you know what, you should do that. So I was doing this for a couple of years, just working at it at nights and weekends. And then one day over like a Christmas break, because our company closed between Christmas and New Year, we were talking about it and just kind of analyzing the whole process of like my future.
Yeah.
And I was in a family-owned business. I knew I couldn't get any higher ranking than where I was because it was three family members. I loved what I did. I loved the people. But I knew that if I chose to do that forever, I wouldn't be able to progress anymore. So it was just one of those things where I had to do it for myself, no matter how much I loved the people I worked with and loved what I did. I knew it was time to step out. And Andy's like, why don't you just quit and start, you know, let's, you know, get your cookbook done. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. And he's like wholeheartedly supportive. So I went in and put in my notice the first of the year, and then I gave him 60 days so I could train people to do what I was doing. And then I continued to write the cookbook, and it came out. I left there in February, and the cookbook came out that following October. And so now I am, and then I decided to write another one. So it's been just this growing thing. And then through the recipes and the cookbook, I met a lot of good people, and I met other women that are like-minded as far as like the no fluff and frou-frou. So that's where the women in business start. Like, it's just kind of like been this like snowball thing. Like, I love this, I love this. And everybody's like, niche down, but I just love it all. Yeah. A multi-passionate entrepreneur is how I like to say it.
I love it. I love it so much because I want to go back to so many points with this. I've done my research. I've been a follower of yours. I'm part of the Arte community. So I just have so much to ask you. Now, going into, you know, your entrepreneur side, when you did start up a luxury boutique, just so everyone knows, she didn't by choice go ahead and start a tuxedo shop and all the additional services. At the age of 20, I believe, is when you started realizing that, okay, I need to become a little bit more self-aware because now I'm in some shit. So just to start on the story, one of her employees went to go cash a check. And this is one of my favorite things ever because it talks about drive in it the whole way. One of her employees went to go to cash a check and it came back bounced. It wasn't cashing. Yep. She told you and you kind of got offended like, what? Like there's no
way. No, I was embarrassed because the thing is, like, I was 20 years old. I had never run a business before. It was an ego thing. Like, I'm doing this myself. I don't need anybody's help. Like, my dad was like so successful in his business. But like, you know, of course I'm 20. I'm like, ugh, I don't need him. I could do this myself.
You didn't see the back end.
Dude, it was like, oh my gosh, it was crazy. It was like lightning just struck me. Like when she came back, I was like, what? Because I had just, you know, back then there wasn't like online banking. It was you waited to get your statement every month. And then you went through and like old school balanced your checkbook. And I had just mismanaged funds because I was like not aware of, you know, terms with invoices and things like that. Like I would get the product. I'm like, oh, cool. And I was just like so busy that I just didn't even think like, hey, I'm going to have an invoice for 15 grand coming in 30 days or whatever. That's going to be due in 30 days. Like I just wasn't, you know, I didn't keep that aware in my mind. And the way my business worked is you could have credit in terms of that. And it wasn't like now where you basically, when you order flowers, you have to pay for them. It was like, hey, put it on my account. So I had charge accounts, in-house accounts. Those would get billed out at the end of the month. So like I would have no cash flow for, let's say, a month, and then you bill out, and then they start trickling in about a week. So it became like, then I had to learn cash flow management, and I wasn't doing that. So I was like, okay, I got to order all this stuff and fill my store and make it look so awesome. But hey, I'm not getting paid for 30 days for these flowers these people are ordering. And like, it was a huge learning thing. And like, I remember, yeah, whenever my employee came back and she's like, hey, the bank won't cash my check because it bounced. I was like, what? They messed up. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like freaking out. In my mind, I was like, what happened? So I took her check and I went to the bank, and they were like, they told me, you know, like, oh, you're overdrawn. I was like, oh crap. So I ran home, got my savings account, went back and withdrew some money, put it in my business account. And I went back and I got cash, like just a bunch of cash out, and I paid everybody. It's like, oh, there's some sort of error in the bank. Like I could never accept it because I was like just so proud and like just my ego. And I was like, oh, they messed up something in my account. I don't know what it is. We're getting it fixed, but here's the money for your paychecks. Just, you know, trash them, you know, rip up the ones I gave you. It was just like that right there was like, that was the turning point in my business where I'm like, this isn't just fun and games. This isn't just about like being an entrepreneur or owning a business and feeling cool because you're 20 years old and you have this shit. It's like, this is the real stuff.
Yeah. And I love that you touched that because you didn't show a panic and then you stated right there, it's the real stuff. And I think that most people, they start a business, and I heard it yesterday. You can make a million, but how much of that is really in your bank? How much did you actually make? And you talk about how you only had $42.86 in your account.
Yes.
Drove you. And I love it because you could be a problem solver or you could be a problem complainer or someone that's like, oh, why me? Why this? And something you said on an interview is if you can't be resourceful or live in a constant state of resourcefulness, you will have failures. And even with that failure right in front of your face, you took the resources and you became resourceful. And I think it's powerful because you have resources. And when you start using your resources, resourcefulness comes about. So my question for you is, when did you adapt the ability to be vulnerable and see that vulnerability and pride don't mix, and that vulnerability will actually help you? When was that set point for you at that moment where you're like, all right, I need to be vulnerable? Because even then you went to starting up different services and you didn't show a panic. So when did you take course where you're like, I gotta ask for some help sometimes, and I gotta put this pride down?
It was about probably 2 weeks after that happened with the paycheck situation, because I was just like, you know, if I was working and I was just thinking, like, I was up at my flower shop late at night by myself, and I was thinking, what the hell? Like, why? Like I am going to bury myself deeper if I don't ask for help. You know, like, I need some help. So then I asked my mom to come in. She came in and she took care of my books and got them like all situated and squared away and showed me where I made mistakes at and where this was at. And then, you know, she helped me a lot. And then, you know, I just kind of talked to my dad about, you know, he's like, yeah, he's like, everything, you know, one thing that he's always said is like, everything looks easy from the outside. You know, people think because you own a business and like you said, you're making $1 million, they think you're making $1 million, not your business. They don't see overhead. They don't see the insurance you have to pay, the maintenance on your building, you know, the taxes for your employees. Like, people don't see that. And I didn't see that. You know, I saw that people come in and spend a lot of money and I could buy more stuff for my business. And it was something where, I mean, within 2 weeks, I had my mom in there and she was helping me. She worked for probably, she actually ended up working for me as a designer as well.
Awesome.
And she worked for me for probably a year and a half or 2 years, I guess it was. But that helped a lot because it made me realize, like, you know, one, you always need your mom. And two, that it was, you know, I did need help and it humbled me greatly. And that was, it's one of those things where I was so embarrassed at the time. But looking back, I'm so grateful that it happened because it was like the entrepreneur gods punching me in the face and saying, calm down, bitch. You need to like reel it in.
Exactly. And I love it because Andy and Ed both say it. The hardest self-development course is entrepreneurship, because we willingly put ourselves in the ringer, ups and downs.
What's wrong with us?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I always say, why do I willingly wake up at 5 a.m.? Why do I willingly, you know, do these things where I don't know if I'm going to get paid, or, and I don't know if the idea is going to go, but I got to just shoot with it. So for you, what has been the most enjoyable thing about being an entrepreneur, and what has been the hardest?
Man. Okay. So the best thing I think overall in being an entrepreneur is, you know, like, one, obviously the response is, you know, you're your own boss, you know, but it's more so of that. If I have a vision or a goal or a dream or a wish or anything, I know that I have to do it. And it's a realization of you are in control of doing it. Because if you had an upper management or a boss, you're like, oh, well, I got to go through them. And then I got to do this, blah, blah. And it can kind of like, nah, it's not worth it. But for you, there's literally nothing holding you back but yourself. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but if you really think about it, like if it doesn't happen, it's because of you. It's not because your manager said no or your boss turned you down. It's literally you. And it revolves around, are you resourceful? Are you resilient? Do you want it? And how bad do you want it to happen? One of the, you know, worst things, is that what you asked? Is that how you phrase one of the
what has been one of the hardest things about being an entrepreneur?
Trying to be a one-man band, you know, when you first start out, there's so much you need to do, and was finding this like adjustment. This is going to sound so crazy because I don't have kids, so I can't really relate it, but I could imagine it being like a new baby, you know what I mean? You're like playing it, you know what's going to happen, and then this new baby's there, and you're like, what do I do with it now? I just feed it and change it. But there's so much more to it. And there's so much, you know, like, when does it go for naps? How much does it eat? Does it graduate? Like, that's kind of the way entrepreneurship is. It's like, it becomes your baby and the baby needs a lot of stuff and you're only one person. So how can you get your time management down? How can you organize yourself to be most productive?
Yeah.
And that was the hardest thing for me, is adjusting it. Because when I left my career in an office to be full-time entrepreneur, author, do all this stuff, I had a, you know, there was a period of time where I didn't know what to do or when. Like, there would be days where I'd really, you know, do a little bit of this or do a little bit of that, but then I'm like, oh shoot, I got to do this. And I was spreading myself so thin.
Instead of
getting structure down and staying organized is absolutely crucial. Until, if you're in a place where you can have like an assistant or you hire more, that's great. But for a while, it's going to be a solo show and you need to be able to do a lot of things. And in order to get those things done, your time management's key. And I know that sounds like maybe that's not a big, like a hard thing or a failure, but it can, because I feel like because I had a hard time adjusting to that, it put me back, you know, a while. Cause it wasn't like, cause this is like, I'm working in my house. It's not like I have a storefront to go to anymore where I know exactly what I'm doing. It's dedicated time. It's, I'm at home. I'm trying to juggle everything and manage the household and, you know, do all this stuff. So I feel like that's been a big thing, is like the time management aspect of it to be effective.
So what are some tips right now for, let's say a solopreneur, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
When you are a one man band, what are some tips to start getting organized? I know that I have a routine in place. I do block days or block schedules, but at a point was I was doing so much block schedules. I was realizing, well, I'm doing so much blocking. Where am I actually getting something done? And then it evolves. So an entrepreneur right now that's feeling overwhelmed, that's working from home during this pandemic, has the kids yelling, the dogs barking.
Yeah.
How the hell do they stay organized? How do they stay in routine?
Okay, so first, a morning routine is crucial. No matter if you're not during the pandemic or outside of the pandemic, you need to develop systems and strategies right now that you can carry on after this. So that does become with a solid routine. Try to get up around the same time every single morning. You know, go through your, take your vitamins, get your workout in, take your shower, get ready, all the jazz, you know. Do that, because one, that's going to start your day in on the right foot. And also, you know, reflect and, you know, show some gratitude. That helps. For me, of course, speaking, like showing that I'm grateful, and I write down three things every morning that I'm grateful for, just to kind of set the tone for the day. It's creating a structure. You're saying your block scheduling, you know, those routines are important. You know, if you know every Tuesday and Thursday, you have this time, try to keep as much as a system that you can. And if you're like, I have so much stuff to do, Emily, I don't know where to even start. Grab a pen and paper, write down every single thing that you need to get done in your business. And I'm not talking about 5 years from now. I'm talking about things that need to be done this year. Like, what are your goals for this year? A lot of times people want to write these ginormous 5-10 year plans. Let's just start with the now. Like, what are you trying to get done this week, this month, this year? Start there. And then you can start dissecting that. Work backwards. I like to always talk about, you know, when I do my webinars about planning and organizing, it's, you know, work your goals backwards. You know, like, okay, so by, you know, September, this is going to be a product that I'm coming out with. So what needs to happen now? Well, I need to have it done. I need to have it printed. That way I can get the marketing tools. So I need to get the marketing shots this day. I need to have it printed in hand by this day. And you slowly work back on your calendar, and you're taking this macro project and you're putting it down on a micro level. And what that does is, once you have a little micro breakdown of this big project or things you need to do, you're able to take those and plug those in your calendar, what you need to get done that day. And then what I like to do is take similar projects and, you know, put them on the same day. If it's a lot of computer work, I do a dungeon day is what I call it, on every Thursday. I don't book anything at all except just office stuff. And this is really good to, one, get any like edits done I need to do, catch up on emails, all that kind of stuff. Or if I'm caught up on that, it's a day where I could just work solely on my business. I'm not taking calls, no, you know, podcasts, no recordings. I'm not leaving the house except just to work out. So planning a dungeon day has been a huge thing for me. And I call it dungeon day because my office used to be in the basement and I would just call it that because it was like a little darker and that's just how I got the name.
Yeah.
But you know, planning like tasks together help because you don't want to be, okay, well today I'm going to work on my computer, but then I have to run to the printer that's, you know, an hour away to do this. Try to manage your time in a way where you can feel the most productive and most efficient each day. Because by taking these steps for productivity, that's what's going to make you feel good and empowered and motivated and determined to get the stuff done because you're actually able to see some sort of progress every single day.
I love that. So what are some mistakes that you're seeing entrepreneurs make when they're trying to start out or when they're trying to expand? We know that not having time management, not having organization. Wow. What are some other mistakes that you're seeing that are common that you wish entrepreneurs would stop doing before they do it?
Taking advice from people that aren't entrepreneurs that say they are, that haven't really ever done anything.
Because
they're taking advice from someone that hasn't done it. You know, like would you take medical advice from, someone that's a plumber? No, they don't know it. They may have heard it or read it on WebMD, but that's not what you want. You want someone that's done it. So it's, you know, you need to find someone, a mentor or a group of mentors that have done what you have done, not necessarily in the same industry, but are you opening brick and mortars? Find someone that's done brick and mortars. They can help you. Or are you creating online courses? Find someone that's great at that. You need to find someone to take in the information, to consume their content that has done something you want to do. Yeah. Another thing is they try to be everything to everyone. And they end up almost like a pandering. I notice this a lot on Instagram where they don't ever stand their ground on a certain point or a certain view. And not saying you have to be very like polarizing with it, but you know, people need to know who you are. And if you, one day you say you like this, but you're kind of like this too, people don't really have an idea. And people fear that, well, if I niche down or if I just am too direct with what I'm looking for, I'm going to miss out on all this business or all these people. No, you want to cater to the people that are like you, that share your loves and passions, and then they have a need for your product because those people have people that are like you, that they're friends that they can refer them to. So it's trying to be everything to everyone, I think is a big error as well.
Man, I love that. Thin the herd, put yourself to be a target for rejection because it's so true. If you're for everybody, you're really for nobody. And exactly. I kind of had this little dilemma myself about a month and a half ago. I'm this person that gives so much value and I'm so kind and I don't like to start Facebook debates. And I see that there's a lot of Facebook debates. And I made a very small comment about Grant Cardone. And the world crashed the internet on my Facebook page. And it was just more or less that I had to come out and say the next day, just because there's sheep that follow a message doesn't mean that that makes me a sheep either. And just because I have a strong opinion doesn't make a difference of who I am. I need to make sure that people understand my messaging, because if you cover it up or you don't show your true colors, the internet's going to crash like it did on my ass a month ago.
It's wild. You know, I was thinking about that this morning is that, you know, so many people just, they want to be reassured that their thoughts are the right thoughts. But the thing is too, is it's also important that when we see these things, like especially on the internet, we don't say, you know, I got bombarded the other day on something and they were blowing up my comments and then they were in my DMs, you know, getting all upset about something.
So upset.
And all I said, I go, you need to think about this from this perspective, because they were trying to push their perspective and views onto me. I said, well, what about this? You know, because people are like, oh, you don't know, you can't relate, blah, blah, blah. Well, here, have you ever thought about this? You know what I mean? Because people don't know you on social media. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they know who you are. They don't know all the inner workings of your life or all your thoughts. You're sharing one specific thing in a 2,200 letter caption. You know what I mean? And so, you know, it's, and if people, you know, they want to believe what they want to believe because they want to be reassured that their thought process is right. Instead of, you know, sometimes it's okay to see other views, to maybe, you know, open your mind and expand of like, I wonder why they think like this, and kind of dissect that down instead of just like barking, you know, at the tree.
Yeah, no, definitely. I hear you. That's exactly how I said it. I'm like, you know, at this point, the comment I made was, you know, Grant Cardone just laid off a couple employees, but go invest in Cardone Capital. And for me, I'm very aligned with what Andy stands for, what you stand for, what Ed stands for. And I'm for the people and I'm for the culture. I can't see an individual make a comment, preach a whole value system, and then go ahead and do something like that. So I had to just make it very clear to everyone and everyone that's watching this live right now. Some people are going to probably not agree with me, but it's still true. I'm going to stay aligned to what I believe in. And I think a lot of people don't do that. And that goes to me asking you about your post that you made about loving yourself is unconditional. And I love when you said that, because loving yourself is unconditional, you said, and then you put false. And anybody listening to this, you need to listen up, because she's going to give some bombs. You said promoting self-love, loving yourself, and you are enough with zero reasons as to why and how is irresponsible. Please, please, please elaborate on that a little bit more, because I think this is good for anybody right now, woman, male, kid, entrepreneur, the whole world needs to hear this.
Right. Well, my view on this and my take on this is that, you know, you're not happy, you know, gosh, I have so much to say on this. I'm trying to
go ahead.
So it's not an unconditional thing. People on social especially are trying to gather their herds together by presenting this message, where being in the fitness space, I know for a fact that people that are not doing what they want to do, they're not moving their body, they're unhealthy, they, you know, overweight, they've got, you know, diseases they don't want because of the choices that they made, you know, in life, they're not happy. I had so many people that were supportive of that message in my DMs, people that also hated it. They absolutely hated it, cursed me up one side and down the other. Because here's the thing, is that you can't say that. You can't say, I love myself. But you have to work for that. It's earned. Every single thing is earned. You know, when people feel the best about themselves is when they're fucking doing their shit. They're making progress. They're being effective. They're being a good spouse. They're being a good employee. They're being a good parent. They feel good about themselves. And that is what self-love is. And that's what, you know, this like, oh, you are enough. You are enough is not, hey, you know what? Just chill and eat some chips and watch Netflix all day. That's not a thing. What are you contributing to? You know what I mean? Yeah. If you literally have the lifestyle that your dog has of just chilling all day, you just go to the bathroom, watch TV and sleep, that's not something to like pride yourself on. And I feel like it's irresponsible for people to deliver that message to others on social media or through these courses and things like that, because it's saying, hey, you are, you know, it's okay. And the reality of it is, I feel it's irresponsible, because here's what it is when people are telling you that, I take that as a place of they want to keep you down. They want to keep you low because, hey, you look up to them and they know just enough to keep you down here. So they're just like, nope, you just stay down here. So the thing is, when people say that shit to people and say, oh, you know, you're enough, they're saying, hey, don't get any better, because I don't want you better than me, because then you're not going to want to come to me. And I'm like your coach, because I think I know more than you. They don't know more than you. A real coach or a real person, a real mentor says, hey, get your fucking shit together, go to the top. And hey, if you pass me up, good job. I'm glad I had a part in that. That is what like self-love is like, fucking like, I'm going to go to the roof with this shit.
Oh, I love it so much, because it's so true. If you are around me and you tell me when I'm down, it's okay to be down. It's all right. Next luck, better luck next time. I do not want you around me. I want someone around me that when I am down and I am just Netflixing all day and I am eating chips, you're going to look at me and tell you, get the fuck up and get to work, get to going. Like, who are you? And I think not enough people adapt that.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is that, you know, I used to go out and drink three nights a week and didn't do shit and ate shitty food and, you know, didn't work out. And I just felt like shit about myself. So, you know, don't come knocking on my door that like, oh, I don't relate. No, I did. And you know what? It took a fucking wake up call, because you know what? I didn't feel great about myself and I hated myself, but I just was like, well, okay. I led this, like, I'll start on Monday bullshit. You know what I mean? And I never, and finally, I just finally snapped out of it. I was like, the only way I'm going to get better is if I get better.
Yeah, I love that, because at 26, you got your shit together, you say. Yeah. At 28, you got serious and made a mission. And at 37, you're the most proudest that you've ever been. And I think that a lot of people don't understand that you got to put yourself through the ringer. I always talk about ownership, and ownership is own your shit so you could go ahead and direct your shit. Because if you don't own it, what are you going to do? You know, you can't give me commitment if I can't even give myself a commitment. So right. I love that. And what I'm going to do now is let two members of the tribe ask you a question. Okay. The first person is Sarah Vincent. You can go ahead and unmute yourself, Sarah.
Oh, I love Sarah.
And show your face.
What? Here we go. Are you there?
Yep, we hear you.
It says you stopped my video.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Access denied.
Blocking me, kid.
Go ahead. You're good now.
It still says I can't.
Okay, well, we hear you. So go ahead.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Good. How are you, Sarah?
I'm so good. I love this woman so much. She's amazing. I knew you were on. I'm like, oh my gosh, she is my organizational ninja, is what I like to refer to you as. Because your advice has absolutely, it's what I know I need to do, but the context with which you convey it, I'm like, okay, I can put that. And actually, I have my Emily Frisella day planner right here.
Yay!
Yes. So one of my questions to you is social media marketing. This is your forte, you're a genius at it. And it's, I know the way you connect with your audience is real and vulnerable. And in the process of growing what I'm doing and with my nonprofit, and now I'm with my let management and doing these things, it's all aligned with who I am and what I'm doing. Uh-huh. But I don't have the following. And, you know, I have my nonprofit page and, you know, I've learned how to, you know, do a family post, a personal post, a business post, you know, and I rotate those. And I just would love to hear any insight as to, I'm not buying my followers. So organically, how do you grow?
Well, one, I want to touch on that. Organic is the only way to grow your following, because otherwise you look like a big fool, like all these people that have bought all these followers and stuff, and then Instagram,
right?
Sleep of these ghosts, and all of a sudden their following drops like a million people down and stuff. And plus, I mean, they have to, you know, realize there you are.
Hi. You
know, there's engagement calendars that anybody can look at publicly to see what people's engagement are. And you'll see these people with like 8 million followers and they have like a 0.8 engagement, which means they're buying their shit, you know? And then it devalues everything in your brand too. It's like running a discount on you and your brand when people buy their followers and buy their likes and comments and stuff like that. But as far as building your following, it's going to take time. You know, it's just like anything else. If you're building a business and you're building it, not only just the actual business you're running, but you're building your brand. And that takes a long time. Something that's really key is, you know, make sure that you stick to your message. You make sure that you're utilizing your hashtags properly. And that should be in a new caption. So when you post your, I'm sorry, a new comment. When you post your caption, post it and then go back in and write your hashtags as a comment.
Right.
And then make sure you're utilizing the ones that are in your industry, but aren't like minute. Like, I'm not going to write, you know, Emily Frisella day planner. It's too long. People don't follow it. People are using hashtags like a Google search. So what are people searching for? Is it financial management? You know, personal growth, like what are people looking for? You need to think about, it's like your SEO of Instagram. And with that, make sure that the theme and the look, you're saying like how you post like personal, family, business, make sure that those are relatable to what you're actually offering as well. You don't want to post a family picture or family post does not say, hey, here's my kid, you know, with spaghetti sauce all over their face. Like that's not like a family thing, you know, it needs to be relatable to your audience. But then it also needs to provide some sort of value to them too. You know what I mean? You want to educate them. You want to entertain them. You want to provide something to the people, because if people just see a picture of a kid with spaghetti, a statement, and says like, here's my kid with spaghetti sauce on his face, you're not asking, there's no engagement. There's nothing for people to really like or comment. They're going to give you like the pity like because they like you, you know, but they're not that engagement. So you need to, one, have like a CTA, like there needs to be some sort of call to action. Like, hey, for my family tonight, I made a roasted turkey breast and we did this. Like, what is your favorite family dinner night dish to have? Because you're asking people to engage with you. Or it's something where, you know, occasionally you'll see me, you know, like tag someone you think would like this. And with that, it's, you know, it's bringing their friend, their like-minded friends over to your page. And it can't be scammy and salesy or anything like that. Another thing is that people tend to abuse the whole like giveaways and like they, oh, we're gonna, like every once in a while, that's okay to do. But what happens is it's like, nobody wants to go to their page and like this and then tag three of their friends and then comment this. It's too much work. You're asking for a damn resume on it. You know? So it's really just putting the time with your hashtags, make sure your look and feel, your page looks nice, your photos are nice. Make sure they kind of the same coloring or like if you use any editing or highlighting on that. It's, Instagram is an aesthetic platform. So we need to remember that as well.
Okay.
And you can DM me and I can help you more with this, but those are kind of like some main things that make sure you're having relatable content. You're not pandering. You make sure people know who you are, what you stand for. And it's not salesy. It needs to be relatable. If you're trying to do, you know, with financial management, tell stories like how you miss, tell stories like me. I mismanaged my funds when I had my business. You know, it took me this, this, this. So now I learned X, Y, Z in my life. Don't just say like, if you want to make 10 times more money, invest in me. You know?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. And I have one more, and it's going to be Brad from St. Pete, Florida. You get to ask everyone a question, Brad. You always got a question. I love it. There goes Emily, Brad.
Hey, Brad.
How's it going, Emily? Nice to meet you. So I love you and your husband. You guys are so real. I mean, everything you say is just so real, and it's awesome. You know, especially I heard that you were 20 when you first started your first business, and, you know, I'm 20 years old right now, so awesome. I just started a new career, so that's awesome.
Oh, cool. What are you doing now?
Title insurance.
Oh, cool.
So I'm doing that full time. It's awesome. I just actually was making sales calls right before I got on here. But my question to you is, what do you think the biggest factor for you to be successful is?
Shit.
That made you successful?
Yeah. Honestly, it's been, you know, I could say determination and discipline. That's it. But it's also, you know, I personally, it's like, it's a fear of failure. Like, I don't want to be a failure. And I think about, like, in reality of, like, am I making an impact in this world? Like, if I, you know, I don't have kids, like if I died, would anyone miss me? That's what I think about. And I think that sounds so morbid, but it's like, if I died, what would people say? What could they say? Like, you know what? It's too bad she's gone because I really liked X, Y, Z. And if you feel like you're living a life where you're like not making an impact or that you wouldn't be missed, that is honestly like a big driver for me. I know that, like I said, this is so morbid. It's because I'm not like, you know, I'm not into like a lot of material stuff. Like, yes, we have a nice home and cars, but it's like, that's not like Andy and I was talking about. If all that was gone, we'd be totally fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like a bonus, but it's just one of those things where like, I have such a fear of being nothing, I guess you could say.
Oh, that's good.
That is a good one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's so good. And it's crazy because when I first started coaching, the first lessons that I would make everyone do is write your own eulogy. If you were to die right now, the closest person next to you, what would they say when you're gone? And if you're not content with what they will say, then you got to do a better job. You got to get better at where you're at. And I love that because you talk about four tips to improve your life. And I thought the tips were powerful and I hope we could kind of understand them a little more. You say 1, have alert ears. 2, watchful eyes. 3, a slow tongue. And 4, a hungry mind. And if you're listening to this live, go ahead and run this back so you could get those 4 things out. But most importantly, can you explain a little bit each one, the alert ears, the watchful eyes, the slow tongue, the hungry mind? Because I think us as individuals, we forget that once we get in the circle of things. And then we think that we don't have to do the same things that got us here.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's just something, I think this, yes, those 4 tips, they sound basic, but it's true. Like, we need to make sure that we're listening more than we're talking. You know, we need to make sure that we're trying to process things, that we actually listen to learn instead of listen to have a response. Because when you start to do that, and a lot of people, it's human nature to listen for a response, because that's kind of how conversations happen, is you just ask me a question. I was waiting to respond with my answer, because as you're asking me, I'm processing what I'm going to tell you. So that's a very natural thing. Like, I just did it. You know, you're doing it as this, that's how you communicate. However, you know, we need to also think when you're having a conversation, you're not waiting for just a response. It's okay to take a little bit to develop a response. You need to think about what they're saying, processing it, maybe open a little extra space in your mind to think, well, okay, well, now I kind of get that, and ask questions too. With your eyes, we all, like, it's, life is visual, you know, like, we just, Instagram's an aesthetic platform because it pleases our eyes, but we need to look at things in a different light than just as face value, you know, like I said, that my dad says, you know, everything looks easy from the outside, but we need to look deeper than that of like, I wonder what that person goes through on a day-to-day basis to develop the success. I wonder what their stressors are. I wonder what they've been through to make them fight like they are for their business now, or for their relationships now, or for their career, whatever it might be, you know. And what was the other one? Eyes, ears, slow tongue.
Yeah, slow eyes, ears, slow tongue, and a hungry mind.
Yes. So with the tongue, it's something where, again, waiting to respond, but also you never want to respond out of emotion. There's a quote that's like, it goes something along the lines, and I'm gonna totally like hack it up here, but it's, you know, don't promise things when you're in a good mood, and don't, you know, say things when you're in a bad mood. Because what happens is that we promise people things when we're in a good mood, thinking that we're always gonna be in that good mood. And we, you know, might say some hurtful things when we're angry, but really that's not how we feel. So it's something where taking the time to think about what you're saying, processing it, thinking about what happens later. And I know it's easy to get caught up in the moment and say things, but really, really think about it and before you speak, because a lot of times our mouth works faster than our mind, and it can get you in some trouble. And then, you know, just you always, and with the hungry mind, you always have to be learning. You know, every single day I read, I listen to a podcast. I listen to podcasts that are in, you know, the business development space and self-development space. I listen to every style of podcast there is, because I want to know as much information as I can. You know, I love to learn, because it helps to launch ideas. Like I could listen to a podcast and they would say, like, you know, the leaves are turning green on the trees. Simple statement, but then it can be like, well, I wonder, like, the amount of chlorophyll that's in this. Like, I literally just go on, like, these wild things, and I look things up, you know, and then through that, it's like I go through a rabbit hole. So I can just hear one little piece of information, but if you can gather one piece of information from one piece of content every day, you got to think, that's 365 new things that you learned every single day, or new things that opened your mind to. So I feel like that, you know, you always have to be learning, and every single day learn something.
I love that. That's so powerful. I could go into your content all day and have you break it down. It's so good. But what I want to ask more or less is, when did you start getting a mentor? When you got a mentor, who was that first mentor for you? And how did you come about it? Because I think everybody's problem is just how you said, we could listen to a bunch of stuff, right? But if it doesn't align with us, then is it really giving us value? And I think right now as well, people are having happy hour with YouTube. And what does that mean for me is that they're taking in so much information, but what are you really doing with it? And one thing that Ed talks about is taking information. You can listen to this whole podcast. I don't want you to take everything from this podcast and implement it to your life. I want you to take that one thing Emily said and sparked it, right? So my question to you is, wow, I forgot my question because I got a mentor.
Like, who was?
Yeah, so who was your mentor? How did you find that mentor, and who was that first mentor for you? And when did you decide you did it?
Super, super cliche, but the biggest mentors, obviously my dad, you know, because since my whole bounce check debacle, I look to him a lot for things, because my dad has a way of delivering things. He won't tell you the answer. He tells you, like, a point and makes you work backwards to get that answer. I'm not sure, like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just like his style of the, he'll never say, like, you do this. He's like old school farmer, trucker guy. That's like, he'll say something, you know, like one of his things that he told me before about, you know, money management. It wasn't like, hey, you need to save this and do this and watch this. It was, you know what? You need to watch your pennies, and your dollars are going to take care of themselves. Like, that's how he shares information with me. So he has always been my mentor, as well as Andy's dad. You know, Andy and I, we've known each other, I guess, 14 years. It's always been his dad as well, because his dad was a successful entrepreneur. And just the two of them together have so much information. It's like this fountain. It's like drinking from a fire hose when you start talking. It's really cool when you get it together, because they're old school business. I feel like the older mentors like that, they know what it's like in the trenches and deep, because they didn't have email. They didn't have, at the time, none of them had fax machines or cell phones. So you learn a lot about the actual foundation of business and how to make it work from having a mentor that is older. And then through, because, you know, social media and stuff, that's ever changing. And there's a ton of information and help you can get through people from, like, social media style, like podcasts and, you know, things like that online. But as far as mentors, it would be my dad and Andy's dad, Jim.
Awesome. I love that, because your dad has always been a mentor for you, and you speak about replicating success. And I think anybody listening to this, she said a lot of key points that a lot of gurus don't say, right? They say, go ahead and follow someone that's in the position that you want to be in. But I think that it's also that has gone through a lot of things, that has experience, not just the money, but actually has the experience to go with it. And one of the things that you say, and one of my favorite quotes by you, is don't have the potential of a freight train and go through life with a parking brake on. And yeah. I love that because I think so many of us cap our potential. So how can someone right now get that momentum to get their potential going so they could get that belief in themselves, so they could get that movement? Because there's a lot of opportunities in a crisis. And I think that most people don't see that. They're blind to it because they're stuck in that, I'm not good enough. My potential isn't there.
Well, you know, and that's where it comes in with getting something done every day, being productive every day, being disciplined enough to make sure every single day when you go to sleep, you can say, I got this done. And it's one step closer to whatever your major goal is, because your potential is like ever changing. It's not like, hey, my potential is to make X amount of dollars a year. So you make that and then you just turn it off. And you know, that's not reality. So it's something where you need to realize like you can do better. We can all do better. You know, people always look at like, you know, what it could be, you know, someone famous or someone that, you know, like an Elon Musk or something like, oh my God, I can never do that. Well, you know, there's a point in time when those people said that as well. You know, we had Steve Wozniak come to one of our Arte syndicates. He was talking about, you know, with Apple, and like, it's actually false. They never started in a garage. All those memes are false. He told us about like them starting to go, he was, the only reason we went to the garage is to get our shipments out that we had. But, but he would say, you know, like he is the most brilliant person. Like he was speaking and we were all like he's a absolute genius. But he was, you know, talking about that, like, well, first I thought I'd do this, but he almost has in a very most complimentary way, the mind of a child. And I mean that in a very good way, meaning he doesn't cap himself. He doesn't think that there's a no answer. And for me seeing him was something that I feel like really lit that up for me as far as like the potential goes, because he was 12 years old taking TVs apart and developed how to have color on video games. You know what I'm saying? Like he did all this stuff because he knew that like, I could probably do this. So it's having that curiosity, and the curiosity I feel will lead you to potential, because it's going to take you like, I wonder if I can do this. You do it, you feel achieved, and you know what I mean? And your potential keeps progressing.
Man, that's super, super powerful. So what would you say, Emily, inspires you? Besides wanting to be successful, besides your two beautiful dogs, what really inspires you?
You know, there's a lot, but I feel like it's just honestly having peace in my heart. I know that sounds so probably cliche or something, but it's just knowing.
That is not cliche. That is one of the realest things, because it's foundation.
You know, I want to go to bed at night knowing that I treated people right, that I did the best that I could, and that, you know, I'm working in a way that's honest and true and loyal to who I am. And it's just like, it's keeping myself for who I am. If I can become successful and keep doing what I'm doing, being exactly who I am and not ever having to buffer myself or filter myself, that gives me peace. I don't know how people can feel good about themselves and they're trying to like scam people or, you know, not treating their customer base right or not interacting with the people that are literally supporting you and able to do what you want to do. Like, I couldn't do that. Like it would not be worth it to me. So peace in my heart is honestly what would be like.
That's, I love, fine, that. So how would you define success? For me, like I always tell everyone, success for me, it requires a different level of me every season, right? Because every season isn't the same. So what is success for you, and how do you define that?
Success for me is to where I am providing value to people. I'm helping people. I'm impacting people in a way that I know is helping them and helps them to reach their potential or to learn. It might be just learning a new skill. I have people that didn't even know how to cook, and now because my book, they know how to cook, you know?
Yeah.
That is success to me. Like, I know, like, it sounds so silly, but it's not about the money for me, you know? It's more of like, I feel so good, like, knowing that like this person's life has been impacted because of something that I did. So when I get like sweet DMs or emails and things like that, it makes me really happy, you know, and it makes me happy. And it's like, and it pushes me further, because you have to be a new person every single day. You have to show up for yourself. Like, success to me is serving myself so I can serve others better, you know, by me showing up in a big way to do the things that I do, to live my dreams and to achieve these goals. It makes me a better, you know, a better spouse, a better, you know, daughter, a better sister, a better aunt. It makes me better in all capacities of my life. And to know that I am operating on maximum amount of cylinders that I have to my ability makes me feel really, really good.
I love that, because you are a perfect example of a woman in power and leadership. And I don't just bring any women on here. I'm a very hard-headed one, and I like to bring people that are real. So with that being said, I love that you're on here, and I want to talk a little bit about win over woo-woo movement. What exactly is that? Tell us a little bit more of it.
So Win Over Woo-Woo came about in 2018. I started the Women in Business Workshop. I was so tired of the woo-woo bullshit of like, it literally started with the you are enough and it's okay and pat yourself on the back and eat a bonbon, girl, boss babe, all this like shit. Yeah. And I was God, like, where are the women that, like, I have more of, like, a masculine energy, I feel, you know? And it's like, where are the freaking women that want to, like, win and they want to be successful and, you know, they want to make money and they want to, like, own their shit and not just be like, you know what, I did a craft today or something. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm a crafty bitch, but I'm just saying, like, I wanted these more hardcore women that I can curse around and nobody gets offended, that you can be real, and the ones that literally want to win. And so that's where Win Over Woo-Woo, like, winning is better than this woo-woo bullshit, because guess what? When you win, you progress. When you progress, you get better. When you're getting better, you're living to your best self, not this woo-woo stuff that's like, hey, you just stay where you're at so I can be just a little bit ahead of you. I was just tired of it. So then I was like, let's start. I started the workshop. It was amazing. It was so much fun. And it's a yearly thing. And it's just something where these women are just, they're just fucking badass. There's no drama. There's no bullshit. There's like, literally, it is the best. Like, we all went on vacation together because we all liked hanging out, you know, together. We're like, let's all go to Vegas. There's like 30 of us. I think 15 of us went to Vegas that could go. And we just hung out and like, we all became like super good friends through it, because we all share those things. And there's not like, we want to help like truly empower, not this bullshit pat on the back stuff. It's like literally like, hey, where did you, there's no secrets. Like, hey, who prints your this? Do you have somebody that does this? Or who does this? We all share our resources with each other. We all want each other to do better. And, you know, in turn, like, we're all way more successful and we all attribute it to each other, which brings our bond like even closer with each other.
I love that. And for any woman listening to this, we're about to get really girly in this conversation. So guys, just listen up. What I want to know is, how can a woman, because I feel like sometimes I'm not for women because I am so aggressive and I say the bitch word and I curse and I'm at your face, right? But because I just feel like we're so powerful, I would be doing a disjustice for you if I didn't show you how passionate I am or if I didn't tell you my story. So how can a woman that is lacking the power of being that true force, what are some ways where they can reinvent themselves? What are some ways where they could get that power back? And instead of being powerless, they become a powerhouse.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's like listing out, what do you want in life? You know, a lot of times women get so caught up in the, you know, the mother role, the wife role, the running the house and everything, like, you know, because that's, I can easily get, you know, sucked into that as well. You know what I mean? Because there's so much to do all the time. Though they don't often stop to think about themselves, you know, like, what do I actually want? You become this hamster in a wheel of like, well, this is just what I do. This is what I got to do. I got to get it done. But when you eject yourself from that and figure out like, what do I want to do? What did I used to like to do? They kind of lose themselves in that role. So who are you? You know, you don't have to be, you know, Stephanie's mom. You can be Ashley, who has a child named Stephanie or whatever, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's who are you? What do you like? Because, you know, that's a super attractive quality, I would feel, to, you know, to your spouse. Like, hey, you know, they're not just mom. This is my wife. And we had a child together. You know, I hear that. And I'm saying that because I hear that from some of my clients. You know, it's like they've had to, like, step back into the role of, like, being the wife and then having the children, you know, like, being a joint thing. But it's something where putting down goals, like, achieve something every single day, you know. Even if, you know, and this is, you know, people often, they feel bad about themselves that they're a stay-at-home mom. Are you kidding me? That's, like, the hardest job. I feel like everybody in the country would say that right now of, like, how do you stay-at-home moms do it? Because they make it look so effortless. So they feel like, you know, they're discounted, but they're not. You know what I mean? You have a very important job, you know, but it's like, you know, go work out, read something, do something for yourself to make you feel like you are achieving something. The reward of achieving something is becoming a better you and becoming a powerhouse, because you're informing yourself. You are, you know, empowering yourself. You're taking care of your health. You're able to be a better person to serve, which attracts more people to you, which makes you feel better, which is going to literally be like this, like, cyclical cycle of this going over and over again. That's going to, like, boost you up and make you feel more powerful as a person. So it's really, to boil it all down, because a long answer to it, just doing shit every day to make a difference in your life.
I love that. And to be of service, right? Like taking pride in who you are, instead of seeing that S on your chest for single mom, see it as superwoman, right? Like for me, I love that I could take care of my household, that I take care of my little girl, that I do 100 different things, and there's no damn excuse to it. So I know I don't have much longer with you, but I do want to ask the last two questions. My next question goes more for couples, right? Mm-hmm. You are such a powerhouse of a woman, right? And I think that men get intimidated by that sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've had relationships where I've literally been told, like, you got to pick me or the business. And what did I pick? My business. And I know there's also women that they have a backbone, but when they have a man like Andy, for example, where he is so committed, so fucking hard, so driven, how do you become that power couple together? Because you're just as hard, you're just as driven. So how do you not clash and you actually lift each other without having that like fight over power?
Right. But we actually, you know, we get asked that question like a lot. And when you said about couples, I was like, I know where this is going. Because we're both alphas, you know, and they're like, how do you have a household with two alphas together? But honestly, we have like, this is so weird, but like, we have like the most fun relationship. And it's not like, you know, we're not like intense. Like everybody always teases like, man, that must be so awesome having Andy as a husband. It's so motivating. I'm like, he's not fucking standing on the balcony like, come on, baby, brush your teeth. Let's go. That is the biggest like myth to what people think our relationship is. But to us, like, we have so much fun. We literally joke and laugh like every day. Like, we don't take ourselves too seriously with each other. Like, and we've been married nearly 8 years. We've maybe had like 2 or 3 fights. Like, literally, like, it's just, I think it's because we both know what's important. And there's a lot of shit that people get into these arguments or these power struggles over that is totally irrelevant to the big picture of what you want as a couple and what you want as business owners. So it's really realizing, like, as dumb as it sounds, and like, I, again, cliche, but they're cliches because they're true. Is this really going to matter in, you know, 5 days from now or 5 years from now? If that answer is no, don't even worry about it, because there's so much other stuff in life that requires you to be on. You can't let that little mundane stuff drain you of your energy and, you know, your goodness and your love towards someone else. You know, I feel like that's a big thing, because Annie and I both get that. We both dealt with some heavy shit in our lives where we realize that a lot of there's no problems. You know, you don't have to be, you know, arguing about shit. You know, we respect each other greatly. Like, you know, I manage his brand and Arte, and, you know, I'll say like, hey, what about this? And he'll say this. I'm like, well, no, because it's like, we listen very open-minded to each other, to ideas. I could be so jazzed up about something, but he'll say, well, no, because what about this? And then if you did this, I'm like, oh yeah. So we're very complimentary in that way in our business, but then also like in our lives, like what we're going to do and what we want to do, like the roadmap to get where we want to go, you know? Yeah. So it's only as hard as you make it.
Yep. I love that, because you just got to have clarity and be on the same page and just respect.
And that's what it's communication. You know what I mean? Like, we talk all the time. You know, we're homebodies, well, especially now, but even before the virus, we are homebodies. And so we talk a lot about stuff. You know, we learn a lot from watching other people, you know, like, well, how do you think we would handle that situation? And then like, we break it down. I'm like, well, they could have handled it better if they would have just done this or said this. So it's like, you're constantly learning. One thing I like to do too is like, you know, no matter how great or happy your relationship is, I like listening to relationship podcasts too, because there's always new ideas and you're always learning something. So people always wait to try to like fix something when it's broken. But what if you're actually, you know, educating yourself to keep things going well, right?
Yes, I love that. I love that so much.
Listen to things that I'm not going to listen to just cooking podcasts or just business podcasts. I want to learn how to make my whole life better and maintain the goodness before, you know, anything would catch on fire.
Yeah, I love that, because I think most people, you just said it, most people are looking to fix it. Why not just help it flourish?
Exactly.
What you nurture will grow. And a lot of times we don't see that we're nurturing bullshit. We're nurturing negative relationships. We're nurturing all these stuff. So the reason why it's growing more of a pain, growing more bullshit, is because you're nurturing it. So what are you nurturing?
It's the thing, like, you know, people that, you know, you grow weeds in a garden, you see a couple weeds, you're like, nah, I'll just leave it. It's not too bad. No, those little weeds are what's causing a problem, because it's taking the energy out of your plants that you want to grow, because they're choking it out. Like, you got to keep the weeds picked from your garden of life, like, of all this shit, to make your shit stay good. And when you're able to, like, you know, enhance your mind, keep it open and keep feeding it, that's like legit, like the fucking fertilizer to your life to keep the shit good and keep the weeds out.
Man, I love you. I really do. I feel like you're like my soul sister or something. It's so awesome. So my last question to you is, if you could have dinner with any legend besides me, because I am a legend, if you could have dinner with any legend, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Let's hear. See, Andy always has a good one. He always says Hitler, just to see, like, how did you actually do that? Like, not in a morbid way. And, like, when I first heard him say that literally 10 years ago, I was like, man, that's kind of fucked up. But then I was like, you know what? It makes sense, though, as far as, like, you know, the leadership qualities you see. But honestly, I feel like, man, that's a tough one. There's so many people I would like. I would think probably I would actually like to have dinner with Abraham Lincoln, just because of everything that he did in the United States and, you know, the information now that, you know, we have as far, like, just with, like, you know, slavery and things like that. Like, what was it really like, and what did it take to turn people's, you know, mind to having openness to pass the laws that he did and to create the things that he did? And, like, you know, him and Ulysses S. Grant for, like, you know, abolishing slavery and, like, helping people, like, you know, live their full life. But, like, what did that actually take for you to get those things done? Because I believe it was him and JFK, I think, were the only two presidents that would speak out about things that were very dark.
Yeah, and they things were a little differently.
Here's the coincidence, they were both assassinated for what they've done.
Exactly.
And they were the only two presidents that did some of the things that they did. So I'm curious, like, what was the mindset behind that? And what was the fear going forward in that? And, you know, so it's just curiosity.
If you haven't read, and if not, I'm going to send it to you. And that would be my gift that I send my guests from the podcast. But if you have not read Stillness is Key, they actually speak, Ryan Holiday speaks about John F. K. and he speaks about Abraham Lincoln's mindset. And that's where I got more intrigued with JFK, because I learned that during the Cuban Missile Crisis, when, like, the world was, like, facing doomsday, that JFK did the opposite of what everybody wanted him to do. And his stillness, his resilience, basically saved the nation. So I'm definitely going to send that over to you.
I love Ryan Holiday, and that's the one I haven't read yet.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to send it over to you.
Is, if you haven't read 48 Laws of Power.
Oh my God, I'm reading that right now.
Dude, it's a big ass book. When I got it, I was like, oh shit. It's like Da Vinci Code thick.
Yeah. But
Robert Greene is great. Like, I love all his stuff.
That's awesome. So Emily, it's been so awesome to have you in the Power Talk. It was, like, amazing. Thank you so much. So let the people know where they could get more of you, what you have in store, and what you would like to provide value to them with. If you have a book out, if you have a podcast out, where can they get more of you?
So Instagram's always, like, that's, like, my home base, is just Emily Frisella. Super easy. Link in my bio is my link tree, where it's, like, to my blog and all the other shit that I have. I won't bore you. But podcast is called Food in Session. It's like it's a nutrition podcast I co-host with a diabetes educator and dietitian, and we talk all things health and just how to apply it in life in, like, real world terms. Because I hate the fucking go to Whole Foods and spend $8,000 to make one meal. Like, it's, like, legit, you know, real food.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. So yeah, just Emily Frisella is the best way.
Awesome. And if we can go ahead and take a picture with you so we could show off that, I always say,
let me fix my hair.
Yeah, I always say man. So the woman, the myth, the legend, Emily Frisella. So if you guys want to go ahead and show your faces, all you creepers that weren't showing your faces, show your faces now so you could be in the picture.
All I got to say is I appreciate you cueing the picture instead of just taking it when I'm like, meh, and then I look like I, like, have peanut butter stuck through my mouth like a
man.
Dog.
I hope all of you guys heard that, because for some reason they do that shit to me, and every time I'm tagging the picture, I'm like, it's so bad.
Screenshots and they post on social, I'm like, dude, like, do you hate me? And then, like, somebody will post to go, and I'm like, man, you're the real MVP.
Awesome. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Awesome. Thank you so, so much, Emily.
Thank you.
If you can, shoot me over an address that I could send the book to. In an email, that would be awesome. And again, thank you so much. You are a woman in power.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate all you guys being on the call as well. Okay, see ya.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
That was good, guys. So I did just receive an email from Natalie Workman. She says that she has a cold today, so she can't make it to the 4:30 call. So mark that one off. And Matt Sapala, make sure you are fucking there, especially if you're a business owner or someone trying to get insight from someone that has done sales with over $1 billion. That's who we're bringing on today. So I appreciate you guys. And when you tag me, make sure it's a good picture. And make sure you join that raffle that I just dropped for Ed Milet's podcast episode. Basically, if you listen to it, share it, tag me and Ed, and then go comment on his most recent post, hashtag Empower Tribe, and tag me, and you will be entered in a raffle to win $100. So, see you guys.
Peace.
Emily Frisella came into the building and she dropped some major bombs. Such an insightful, inspirational, admirable leader. And I'm so proud that I was able to have her in the Power Talk. I've literally re-listened to this episode about 3 to 4 times. I shit you not. With that being said, I don't want to go ahead and tell you what my takeaway is. I want to know what your takeaway is. So I want you to go ahead and leave a review at the bottom. Rate this episode. Let us know what was the number one takeaway that you're going to go ahead and take action with and apply into your business, apply into your relationship, or just overall apply into your life. She talks so much about mindset. She talked about the pillars of leadership. She talks so much about business. Like literally this conversation is one of my favorites. And I think I say it on every episode, but I'm serious. This was one of my favorite episodes. So I have to say this. If you like what I'm saying, like what I'm doing, like what you're seeing, go ahead and share this episode. Push it out to your network. You never know who this may inspire. You never know who this may resonate with. This was so powerful that I really, really, really would love for you to go ahead and share this with your community. Number two, I want you to go ahead and follow Emily Frisella at Emily Frisella on Instagram. Go ahead and show us some love as well. My Instagram is at Azonani, AzoNani. Follow the In Power Tribe. If you like what we're doing, you like what we're putting on for you guys, continue and go ahead and subscribe. Hit that subscribe button, push it, like it, smash it, whatever the case may be, but just go ahead and do the right thing. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. This was so inspirational. And the last thing I gotta tell you is this. This podcast is sponsored by the Rise Up Project. The Rise Up Project is a 2-day all-woman mastermind where we are completely, completely focusing on 1, mindset and foundation, 2, business mastery. So you want to be there. If you want more details, go ahead and click the link in the show notes or go ahead and reach out to me on social platforms. I love you guys and let's go and let's grow. I'll see you on the next episode.